I welcome you to the first of the 2020 presidential debates.
This is evidence not going to end well.
Can you let him finish, sir?
He doesn't know how to do that.
Amy Coney Barrett is going to be confirmed.
The Republicans will vote for her no matter what she says or does.
I was made to keep them all in line because the show was good while we still kept working and I wanted my job.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. The EU leads a global outcry against rising Polish homophobia, U.S. rights gains are threatened by Trump's Supreme Court pick, and Stan Munro fondly remembers Australia's now golden Lay Girls. Those stories and more this week, now that you've chosen This Way Out.
I'm Melanie Keller.
And I'm Wenzel Jones.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending October 3rd, 2020. The European Union is turning up the pressure on Poland, one of its most anti-queer member states. Meanwhile, diplomats from more than 50 countries wrote an open letter to the government of Polish President Andrzej Duda this week, condemning the anti-LGBTQ oppression he proudly promotes. However, Duda and his governing Law and Justice Party appear to be even more resolved to stay the course. At the end of September, a far-right religious conservative was appointed to head the Ministry of Education. University lecturer Przemysław Czarnik says LGBT people are not equal to normal people. In remarks this week, Czarnik echoed Duda's winning campaign rhetoric reducing LGBTQ people to an ideology. He vowed to not allow children to be exposed to an ideology that contradicts values that have been the foundation of Polish society for centuries. Robert B. Drone is an out gay Polish politician who ran for president. He told Reuters that, "I remember from the school books that Jewish people during World War II were dehumanized. They were called not humans, and to me, these resemble those times." Lawmakers in the eastern city of Krasnik reaffirmed their LGBT-free zone declaration this week and vowed to defend the town from radical striving for a cultural revolution. A significant number of other Polish cities have done the same. It's cost some of them financially beneficial sister city ties to queer-affirming cities in the European Union.
The European Parliament and its chief executive have each condemned the Polish government for even tacitly encouraging those LGBT free zone declarations and the anti-queer discrimination they represent. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen called the zones humanity free zones that have no place in our union. MEP Terry Rinke co-chairs the European Parliament's LGBTI rights intergroup. She argued in support of the resolution urging Poland to reverse course, saying that we are not an ideology, we are human beings. Ambassadors, foreign ministers, and other diplomats from more than four dozen nations are also urging the Polish government to respect and protect the rights of its LGBTQ citizens. Their open letter this week carried signatures from Australia, Finland, India, Ireland, Israel, Japan, Malta, Mexico, New Zealand, Norway, South Africa, Spain, Sweden, the United Kingdom, the United States, and Venezuela. The letter asserts that human rights are universal and everyone, including LGBTQ persons, are entitled to their full enjoyment. Not surprisingly, Poland's Deputy Foreign Minister, Paweł Jablonski, responded by denying the very existence of LGBT-free zones. He called reports of LGBT-free zones fake news and insisted that we believe that public debate should always be based on facts instead of false narratives invented by media or activists. Sound familiar?
Egypt is another ongoing homophobic hotspot that equality activists say the civilized world must address. Human Rights Watch is warning this week that security forces are intent on cleaning the streets by using social networking apps like Grindr to entrap LGBTQ people. Other queer-looking people are picked up on the street during routine security force patrols. The detainees' cell phones are confiscated to provide evidence of their queerness. Then they are all tortured, including painful and invasive anal exams, which allegedly prove that someone is gay, but medical experts say do not. The report also detailed other custodial abuse like repeated beatings, the denial of access to legal counsel and medical care, inciting abuse by fellow inmates, and coerced confessions. Consensual adult same-gender sex is not specifically against the law in Egypt, but it's a taboo subject among the North African country's conservative Muslim and Christian majority population. In the past, queer people caught up in widely publicized raids have been charged with inciting immorality or debauchery. Human Rights Watch LGBTQ researcher Rasha Yunus said, "Egyptian authorities seem to be competing for the worst record on rights violations against LGBT people in the region, while the international silence is appalling." The Egyptian government has thus far declined comment on the report.
Efforts to overturn laws against consensual adult gay sex in the Cook Islands have stalled. Parliament was scheduled to hear a report this week on suggested revisions to the crimes bill that included removal of those laws. Currently, indecent acts with men are punishable with up to 7 years in prison. Discussion of the reforms has now been delayed for at least 3 months, according to the New Zealand news site stuff.co.nz. No reason was given for the delay. It's been a mighty struggle for the Cook Islands activists for the past several years. A select committee of parliament recommended in 2017 that two clauses criminalizing homosexuality be removed from the crimes bill. After they were removed, sustained pressure from conservative religious groups forced MPs to backtrack and restore the clauses last year. Stuff.co.nz notes that indigenous people on the islands were accepting of romantic same-gender relationships until the arrival of foreign Christian missionaries. The Cook Islands is now a self-governing nation in a free association agreement with New Zealand.
Conservative religious pressure has won again, this time in Belize. The government is backtracking on its plans to enact an equal opportunities bill that would have outlawed discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity, among other characteristics. Angry protest demonstrations led by the National Evangelical Association of Belize broke out in the Caribbean island as soon as the introduction of the bill was announced. Protesters burned piles of old tires in the middle of several roads, and about 24 angry demonstrators gathered outside a Christian radio station. The government issued a press release lamenting what it called purposeful misinformation by opponents that forced its decision to withdraw the bill. The statement stressed very good elements of the bill that would bring about tremendous benefits for the Belizean people.
Finally, two lawsuits filed this week in U.S. federal and Virginia state courts are challenging state laws banning anti-queer discrimination. That didn't take long. Democratic Governor Ralph Northam only signed the legislation in April, and it went into effect in July. It specifically outlaws bias based on sexual orientation or gender identity in public and private employment, housing and public accommodations, and access to credit. Offenders are punished with fines of up to $50,000. The notoriously anti-queer legal group, Alliance Defending Freedom, is representing plaintiffs in two cases. A coalition of two Christian churches and a religious school is bringing one case. The other involves a wedding photographer. Their lawsuit argues that the Virginia anti-bias laws violate their First Amendment-protected expression of religious belief and force them to abandon and adjust their convictions or pay crippling fines. ADF lawyer Denise Harrell claimed that such government hostility toward people of faith has no place in a free society. The Virginia Values Act was the first of its kind in a southern U.S. state. A spokesperson for Virginia Attorney General Mark Herring said his office was still reviewing the lawsuits, but that Herring believes that every Virginian has the right to be safe and free from discrimination, no matter what they look like, where they come from, or who they love. His office said that Herring looks forward to defending the Virginia Values Act in court against these attacks. You'll hear more about the infamous Alliance Defending Freedom later on in the program.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude, for the week ending October 3rd, 2020. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is recording remotely during the COVID-19 emergency. It's written by Greg Gordon, edited by Lucia Chappell, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org. where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more.
And you can listen to News Wrap each week by subscribing to our This Way Out radio channel on YouTube. For This Way Out, I'm Wenzel Jones. Stay healthy.
And I'm Melanie Keller. Stay safe.
This Week in Trump ended with the U.S. president's hospitalization for COVID-19, so it's unclear whether he and his entourage were spreading the disease at the first presidential debate on September 29th. It was definitely clear that Trump did not intend for much discussion of relevant issues to be spread.
I'm Chris Wallace of Fox News, and I welcome you to the first of the 2020 presidential debates between President Donald J. Trump and former Vice President Joe Biden. This debate is sponsored by the Commission on Presidential Debates. The commission has designed the format, six roughly 15-minute segments, with two-minute answers from each candidate to the first question, then open discussion for the rest of each segment. Both campaigns have agreed to these rules. Mr. President, can you let him finish, sir?
No, he doesn't know how to do that.
In 47 months, I've done more than you've done in 47 years, Joe.
You're the worst president America has ever had.
The forest floors are loaded up with trees, dead trees that are years old, and they're like tinder. Will you
shut up, man?
Listen, the Vice President answered his final question.
The final question is, I can't remember which of all his ranties.
I'm having a little trouble myself.
It's hard to get any word in with this clown. Excuse me, this
Hey, let me just say, this is not going to end well.
Okay.
This is not going to end well.
Let me ask my question.
Well, I'll ask Joe. The individual mandate was the most unpopular aspect of Obamacare. I got rid of it.
I'd like
and
you
we
to,
will protect
Mr.
people.
President, I'm the moderator of this debate, and I would like you to let me ask my question. All right, that's the end of the segment. We're moving on.
He didn't take them.
Vice President, no.
Can I be honest? It's a very important question.
Try to be honest.
He stood up.
No, the answer to the question is no.
Ukraine.
No, sir.
With $1 billion, if you get rid of
that, that is absolutely not true.
You're doing it.
You're going to have
true.
Gentlemen, I hate to raise my voice, but I see it seems to be. Why should I be different than the two of you? So here's the deal.
Good point.
We have six segments. We have ended that segment. We're going to go to the next segment. In that segment, you each are going to have two uninterrupted moments. In those two interrupted minutes, Mr. President, you can say anything you want. I'm going to ask a question about race, but if you want to answer about something else, go ahead. But I think that the country would be better served if we allowed both people to speak with fewer interruptions. I'm appealing to you, sir, to do that.
Well, and him too.
Well, frankly, you've been doing more interrupting than he
has. Well, that's all right, but he does plenty.
Mr. President, your campaign agreed to both sides would get two-minute answers uninterrupted. Well, your side agreed to it, and why don't you observe what your campaign agreed to as a ground rule, okay, sir?
He never keeps his word.
Can you add back, sir? No, I'm not asking. That was a rhetorical question. Are you willing tonight to condemn white supremacists and militia groups and to say that they need to stand down and not add to the violence in a number of these cities, as we saw in Kenosha and as we've seen in Portland?
Sure,
are you
I'm
prepared
to
specifically
that, but
do it?
Well,
I
go
would
ahead,
say,
sir.
I would say almost everything I see is from the left wing, not from the right wing.
So what are you saying?
I'm willing to do anything. I want to see peace.
Then do it, sir.
Say it.
Do you want to call them? What do you want to call them? Give me a name.
White supremacists and
right wing. Who would you like me to condemn?
White supremacists and right wing.
Proud Boys, stand back and stand by.
The Proud Boys are an all-male, right-wing extremist group known for anti-Muslim and misogynistic rhetoric and for inciting street violence.
But I'll tell you what. Somebody's got to do something about Antifa and the left, because this is not a right-wing problem. This is a
FBI director.
This is a left-wing problem.
White supremacist. Antifa is an idea, not an organization.
Oh, you got it.
Not militia. That's what FBI director said.
We look at Antifa as more of an ideology or a movement than an organization.
Well, then you know what?
No, we're done, sir.
The U.S. Elections Commission is considering various rule changes for upcoming debates, including giving the moderator the option of muting an unruly participant's microphone. That is, if the pandemic allows the debates to continue at all. In related news from the Twitter world, the hashtag Proud Boys is now trending, but with pictures of gay men proclaiming their pride.
Straight military personnel will have to shower with homosexual...
What do you think goes wrong when people shower with homosexuals? Do you think it's the spray makes it catching? I mean, we don't get ourselves dry cleaned.
Hello, I'm Barney Frank, and you are listening to This Way Out, the international radio show for all our sexually diverse communities.
Did you ever get stage fright when you performed in Melbourne? Did you get nervous?
No, I used to. I don't anymore. I just sort of grin and bear it and go straight onto the stage and at it.
Australia's golden drag MC gets at it later in the program.
Today it is my honor to nominate one of our nation's most brilliant and gifted legal minds to the Supreme Court. She is a woman of unparalleled achievement, towering intellect, sterling credentials, and unyielding loyalty to the Constitution, Judge Amy Coney Barrett.
Members of the United States Senate, I look forward to working with you during the confirmation process, and I will do my very best to demonstrate that I am worthy of your support.
The scene was the White House Rose Garden, and the September 26th ceremony itself may turn out to be a coronavirus super spreader event that slows down Judge Barrett's confirmation. U.S. President Donald Trump and his Republican senatorial backers plan to waste no time getting Barrett confirmed, but several key members of the Senate Judiciary Committee who were in attendance have since tested positive. Barrett could be considered the evil doppelganger of the notorious liberal justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg she's nominated to replace. Barrett has taken public positions against reproductive rights, and she clerked for the rabidly anti-LGBTQ justice Antonin Scalia. She describes herself as made in his constitutional originalist mold. Here's some of what Andy Hum and Ann Northrup of Gay USA had to say in their extensive analysis of the Barrett nomination this week.
Barring something that might stop her, Amy Coney Barrett is going to be confirmed.
The Republicans will vote for her no matter what she says or does. So she's been quite open about her willingness to overturn precedents, which means same-sex marriage is on the line. Brown v. Board of Education is on the line, Roe v. Wade, everything is on the line, and certainly Obamacare, which will be argued before the Supreme Court 1 week after the election.
Amy Coney Barrett spoke five times for pay to the Alliance Defending Freedom's Blackstone Legal Fellowship, founded to show students, quote, how God can use them as judges to keep the door open for the spread of the gospel in America. I mean, it's very scary. Well,
these are our major opponents on all these cases, the Alliance Defending Freedom, and she is clearly very closely aligned with them. She is, of course, notorious for her religious beliefs. Her sect believes in husbands controlling wives.
Her sect is people of praise, and it's not anti-Catholic to point out. You know, if she were a devout Muslim and belonged to an extremist Muslim organization, and that once said she viewed her participation in the legal profession as a way to bring about the kingdom of Allah, which is basically what she said about her God, Republicans would get the pitchforks out.
And not only are Obamacare and Roe v. Wade going to be argued in the Supreme Court, but these cases of religious freedom versus non-discrimination laws are going to be adjudicated in the immediate future.
Biden and Harris are avoiding the question about restructuring the courts. Right? That's considered the smart thing to do, is avoid it. They get asked about it all the time. I mean, even Chuck Schumer says everything is on the table. they can change the number.
Yes, they
can. Without a constitutional amendment.
That was Andy Hum and Ann Northrup of Gay USA. They were talking there about the possibility of expanding the number of justices on the Supreme Court. The number is not specified in the Constitution, so Congress could add more votes on the court to balance what would become a heavily conservative 6-3 majority with Barrett's confirmation. It's been tried, but it's not easy. Even beloved President Franklin Delano Roosevelt pushed such a proposal and failed.
Hey everybody, this is Leah Delaria, and you are listening to This Way Out.
It seems strange calling you Stan. You don't mind me calling you Stan, do you?
No, I don't mind. Actually, I was wondering what to call you.
Gay Girls was a female impersonating show with beautiful dance numbers, lots of comedy, and fabulous over-the-top costumes.
Last time on This Way Out, we began our commemoration of the 50th anniversary of the Australian drag company Les Girls. Stan Munro was the show's star MC, and he even became friends with Australian ballet star Sir Robert Helpman, one of many celebrities who came to see the show. He now continues sharing memories of his many adventures with This Way Out Sydney-based correspondent William Broom.
Can you take us through a typical show? Was it more than one show a night?
The show started at 8 o'clock. That was the first show. And the second show started at 10. But all the shows were beautifully choreographed. We had our own choreographer who had been a dancer on the circuit around Australia. And she taught the kids in the show how to dance.
Your costumes, did you get them made for you? Where did you find them?
My costumes I had individually made, but all the costumes for the showgirls were made by the company dressmaker, who was a brilliant dressmaker by the name of Kenny Williams.
The numbers you performed, did you lip sync or did you sing live?
When I first started at Les Girls in 63, I used to lip sync comedy numbers. I used to take a current pop tune and I would lip sync to that, but I would do it as a comedy thing. But all the kids in the show lip synced because I went on to sing in my own voice.
When you lip synced at Les Girls, were there any favorite songs you'd perform to?
No, not really, because I didn't lip sync all that much. My shtick was doing stand-up comedy and introducing the different performers as they came on stage.
And did you ever get stage fright when you performed in Melbourne? Did you get nervous?
No, I used to. I don't anymore. I just sort of grin and bear it and go straight onto the stage and at it. You know what I mean?
With Les Girls in Melbourne, same with Sydney, but in Melbourne also, you had many celebrities who'd come to see the show. Can you remember any of them?
Oh, yes, we had lots of stars that were working the nightclub circuit in Melbourne would pop in to see the show. Yeah, Rosemary Clooney, for example. Frankie Howard came in to see the show. Yeah, quite a few.
And I believe even Barry Humphries, who plays
Barry Humphries came to see the show, but he always stood at the back and watched. And we had that wonderful actress, Yvonne DiCarlo, came to see the show. Yeah. Oh, and Sir Robert Helpman became a very good friend of mine, and he loved to come and see the show, yeah.
What was Robert Helpman like?
A wonderful person. So funny, off stage. Yes, he's a wonderful sense of humour. So him and I hit it off really well, yeah.
Have you any favourite anecdotes from your time at Les Girls in Melbourne?
No, not that I can think of. You know, I was very strict on performing. I wouldn't put up with any nonsense from the cast because that was my job. I was made to keep them all in line because, you know, if the show was good, well, we still kept working and I wanted my job. And I had it for 8 years.
During your time with Les Girls in Melbourne, you and your fellow cast of girls often performed on television shows. What are some of your favourite memories?
Oh, we did quite a few TV shows, actually, and we did a lot of appearances. One of our famous appearances was the whole cast in crinolines, and we all turned up at the Melbourne Cup. On Melbourne Cup Day, the whole cast arrived. We were all in the back of a huge truck, a huge removal van, and that's how we arrived. And we all got out of the truck in beautiful crinolines that had all been specially made. And yeah, it was great. We caused a stir at Melbourne Cup in 1973.
When you were at Les Girls, you were a gay man in drag. You were a lot of performers who were living as women. Were there any problems with the law? Did you experience gangsters or anything like that?
No, never. No, actually, all the kids lived as women. I lived as a man. But no, we never had any problems with any untoward people. Yeah, we were pretty well guarded, actually.
During your time at Les Girls in Melbourne, did you experience any homophobia?
No, none whatsoever. Not from the audience, no. No, none at all.
You appeared in the Australian film, people often say it was a seminal film, Alvin Purple. How did you get involved with that?
Well, actually, the director of that came to see me at Les Girls working. He offered me the part. He said, I've got a part in this new movie starring Graham Blundell, a well-known Australian actor, and we want you to play the part of a bored housewife, Mrs. Warren. Alvin is demonstrating waterbeds, and Mrs. Warren invites him in to show what happens on a waterbed, and so it went on from there. And it was a great cameo role for me, and that movie was shown all over the world.
And what are your favourite memories from that film?
My favourite memories were working on set, you know, with Australian actors. It was just great. And, of course, I went to the premiere and everything, which was held in Melbourne. Yes. It was shown in Wales, too, so some of my family saw it.
Of course, you were born in Wales. Just briefly, can you explain what brought you to Australia in 1963 to Sydney?
That's where Les Girls star Stan Munro picks up his story with our William Broom next time on This Way Out. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from Melanie Keller and Renzel Jones, produced by Brian DeShazer, and from William Broom. Jason Mraz and The Undisputed Truth performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Yavanna Foundation, a bequest from the late Christopher David Trentum, and donors David Hunt and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappelle and the entire This Way Out crew, I'm Greg Gordon. We all thank you for listening online at thiswayout.org and on 2BAY Byron Bay, New South Wales, WMPG Portland, Maine, KRFP Moscow, Idaho, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay safe and stay tuned.